Today we tackle one of those age-old questions, Mac or PC, and now maybe a related question, iOS or Android. Lively discussion on that. Hopefully you'll come away with a good idea of maybe whether you should be a Mac or a PC. All that and more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. This is episode 316 for Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. Show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. We try and ferret out where those intersections are, make sense of them for you, and hear back from you on where you think those intersections are as well. And by my side, my virtual side, as usual, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you again. It's the countdown to the big holiday season. I tried to buy Thanksgiving cards this weekend, and they said, we don't sell those. We sell Christmas stuff. So Christmas is everywhere, it seems. Wow. And we haven't even made it to Thanksgiving yet.
So, no kidding.
Yeah. Crazy time of year.
Yep, absolutely. And things are hopping around here. We have a lot of things going on with the podcast. We've introduced some new features. We're always looking for topics. We get a lot of great feedback. And today we thought we'd venture into the sometimes dangerous waters of Mac versus PC, Apple versus Android, all those decisions that an individual or even an organization needs to make about the many choices that they have. Plus, as you're looking at buying Christmas presents, you're going to have to make some decisions if you're buying a gadget for somebody or using your Christmas gift cards or whatever. If you've got some Amazon cards coming, whatever, you're going to have to make some decisions if you're buying a smartphone or a tablet or a new computer.
That's right. And as we look at this from the church or school perspective, you want to make sure you're picking the right tools to assist with your ministry. You know, there's a plethora of apps and exciting things to do in terms of technology and ministry, but the platform makes a difference. Some things work in some places and not in others. You want to make wise use of the money that God has gifted you with. Be good stewards of the gifts that you have. And it's a big decision, and when you make it, you're kind of going down one path or another, and so you want to,
you don't want to be flip-flopping. Wisely. Yeah, absolutely. You want to make that decision once, and if you're thinking about switching, you want to do that for the right reason, too. It used to be so easy, Sally. There was really only one choice if you were in business or you were at a church or school, whether that be because of the software that was available or the cost involved. It used to be all PC. And, you know, cell phones were pretty minimal back in the days of, the Palms or, the Nokias. Very simple choices. Now, with all kinds of flavors of smartphone, we have kind of three major players there at this point. And on the computing side, we have two major players. It can be a tough choice. I get that question quite a bit. I don't know if you do, Sally. But the biggest question I get right now is from current PC users who are thinking about switching to Mac. And because they see all the commercials, and it's kind of cool to use a Mac, and the hardware looks cool, and so on and so forth. And, that's a good conversation to have. But in many cases, the barrier to moving away from a platform is not worth it for what you get these days. And I think we're going to talk about that, too, because the gap between the two is aren't significant. There isn't a compelling reason to say, boy, I should really be using a Mac or I should really be using Android. Those kinds of discussions are somewhat mute because the platforms are so equal.
Yeah, Martin, as I prepared for the show, I turned to my favorite resource for researching things, Pinterest, because I thought there might be some interesting infographics related to PC versus Mac. And one that I found that I thought was quite humorous, it said, I'm a Mac and I'm a PC. That's kind of the marketing ploy these days. But they both look pretty similar, and since we do everything through a browser now, we're pretty indistinguishable. So maybe some of those differences that used to exist are kind of melting away as the world moves to the cloud, and you really just need a platform to get you there.
Right.
And any old platform will do. You mentioned two major players. I think the Google Chromebook is an up-and-coming player, at least on the low-end side, and it gets you to the cloud, which is kind of the point of this graphic.
Right, yep.
So another infographic I found, just to kind of give a little bit of perspective maybe before we dig in, and obviously it's hard to get up to the minute stats, but according to quarter four of 2010, PC and Windows had 89% of the market share and Apple just 10.8% of the market share. And among the people surveyed in this, 52% use PC, 25% Mac, and 23% use neither. So just to give a little perspective on the audience there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's hard to tell, and it maybe doesn't make a lot of difference, but there's a couple factors, which we're going to talk about in a minute, that may play in by about who else is using what you're using, definitely within a staff or within an affinity group where you want to exchange files, those kinds of things. Maybe at the top of our list, as we were kind of doing planning for the show, Sally, one of the first topics that came to my mind was cost. There is a cost difference, and we're talking on the Mac and PC debate now. There can be a significant cost difference. For a similarly configured device, let's say a laptop, you're probably paying quite a premium to move to an Apple device, or a Mac in particular. Although there are certain flavors and brands that you can compare and contrast, I would say an Ultrabook on a PC is going to run you between $500 and $750 for something pretty good. I would say closer maybe to the $750 range. But on a Mac, the only way to even get close to that is probably with a MacBook Air, and you're talking about $1,000 at that point. So, you know, there's a little bit of a delta there, which you have to, you know, you have to take into account, especially if you're going to, let's say, outfit an entire organization. So you're going to do a whole staff, and you're going to make some decisions about what they should be using. So it's not just one that you're buying, but you're multiplying it times 5 or 10 or 12, whatever.
I think one of the big concerns would be software, and as we mentioned, as more things go to the cloud, maybe that's less of a concern. In my mind, I think of a Mac as being for the designer and the crew, you know, the people that are going to do high-end graphic stuff or video editing or things like that. Maybe Mac has an advantage there, but I don't know if that's true anymore or not. Martin, what do you think?
I think there's parity or equality with the apps at this point. So I'm going to take the Mac. I'm going to be the Mac, and you're going to be the PC in some of our conversation here. But really, the only reason I use a Mac, and I use both, I would say I use both about 50-50 at this point, so I'm just kind of split. But the reason, really the only reason that I use a Mac is because of some of the development I need to do for iOS programming for the iPhone, where Apple forces you to use their products. So there's that component. So if you're into that kind of thing, you have that to contend with. But I would say if you're using Adobe products like Photoshop or InDesign or Illustrator, they work almost exactly the same on either platform. I would say that there aren't too many other areas that I can think of that are going to, you know, sway you one way or the other if you're just talking pure software. Because software manufacturers now are understanding that, hey, I need to provide a PC version and I need to provide a Mac version.
What about that whole argument that Macs are safer in terms of viruses? I know I hear that a lot, that everybody's writing viruses for the PC platform, and Macs just don't have that issue.
I would say in general that's still true. But as Macs grow in popularity, there is an increasing number of viruses that you're going to see there. It's more security by obscurity, you know, to a certain degree. If somebody's going to write a script to hack into an operating system, you know, we saw the numbers before. There are just a lot more Windows machines, and a lot of those Windows machines are probably carrying more valuable data, I would want to say, because they're more used in business situations. So if somebody's looking at getting credit card numbers and you know, maybe in our case donor information, those kinds of things, they're probably going to look first to the PC and then to the Mac. But I would say that's changing, but in general right now I'd say that's a true statement. It's probably safer. You probably have safer computing environment if you're on the Mac side. But there are obviously tools on the PC side to keep you safe.
I myself have just recently gone to a Mac laptop. I'm still learning my way around. The good news is that it's a dual boot, so I can actually live on the PC side of the Mac, odd as that seems. But just getting used to the difference in the keyboard, it's a lot more minimalistic. There's not home and end keys and things like that that I'm more used to on a PC keyboard. Literally, when you go down one path or the other, you're making a big investment. You have to really train your brain
to switch sides. Yep. It's there are some of those not annoying, but nuanced differences that will make a difference in your day-to-day life. And I have to kind of live in both worlds because of some of the requirements. So I primarily use a Mac keyboard, but even if I'm on the Windows side now, that's your life too. So you don't have a Windows button or a key, but you have a command key, which kind of functions the same way. So there are workarounds, that kind of thing. I would say if you're somebody that has a lot of keyboard shortcuts, you know, that's a tough thing to give up.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
And there isn't parity on the operating system level, I would say, for utilities especially. There are utilities that kind of do the same thing on both, but things like text expanders and those kinds of things, there are specific programs in each platform. I would call them maybe productivity applications that are going to be different per platform because they really take advantage of what the platform can do. I would say stability-wise, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Sally, since you're playing Miss PC, I would say for me the Mac seems more stable most of the time.
I guess I probably don't have enough experience. I haven't lived with a PC that has been unstable, so I'm blessed in that regard.
You've got a great
what I was thinking
staff.
About was the fact that there are such a huge variety of PCs on the market, and Mac is not got the cloning that PCs have. And so you have to just be really careful with the PCs that you invest in, because you certainly can go down a path that's maybe cheaper or whatever and end up with bad quality.
Yep. That's one advice that I would definitely give, and I've seen schools make this mistake all the time where they're having to buy a number of them and they cheap out on the PC side and they wind up paying for it, and their staff becomes much more unproductive and unhappy as a result. Spend the extra couple $100. The machine will last longer, so you're not losing anything in the long run, and you're spending less time in support of those machines as well. So I'd say, you know, stay away from the bargain basement ones, even though they look attractive, even spec wise. They're just, you get what you pay for, and that I would say that goes across the board in all kinds of technology.
One area that I think the PCs really shine is the fact that so many people are on them. So if I need help with my PC, you're a lot more likely to find someone who's knowledgeable about it, you know, in your congregation or whatever it may be. If you need to exchange files, typically your file formats are going to be a lot more compatible with the world in general by being on a PC. So I think, you know, you are gaining something by being with the more widely used device, for sure.
Yeah, and that's a consideration, absolutely, and that's probably one of the things about a Mac that you have to know going in, that you're kind of locked in to that ecosystem, you know, the iTunes and iBooks and iOS ecosystem. It just doesn't play well with let's say, Android or Windows phones, for instance. You know, there really is a challenge there if you want to branch out or even open, you know, some of the open source products out there. So you're really kind of signing up for, you know, Steve Jobs' world, so to speak, when you're on the Apple side, and that may be fine, and that's some of the advantages of it as well, where it is simplified. There's really only one way to do it, and that's kind of how it works. Hearing a little echo, Sally.
Okay.
Volume down just a tad.
You bet. I guess if we had to declare a winner, Martin, even though I'm probably not the more eloquent speaker on behalf of PCs, I think that at least from a corporate standpoint, probably the PC would be the winner, looking at it like for churches or schools or whatever.
Yep.
You agree?
Yep. I think I would usually advise that direction. Even, you know, now that you throw Chromebooks in the mix, I think if you're talking about outfitting a student body with a machine, I would definitely move toward Chromebooks, just because of some of the things that we've talked about in the past. But I don't think that I would recommend that on the faculty level or the church office level. I just don't think you can live in that world yet because of the reliance on Microsoft Office and some of those tools, and local storage is still an issue. So I would say, you know, go with a PC, but don't go with the low-end PC. Find something. I'd say the sweet spot, if you're looking for a laptop, is going to be in that $750 range. I wouldn't, you know, venture too far below that.
Does anybody buy desktops anymore?
What's that?
Does anyone buy desktops anymore?
I think so.
Okay.
And there's reasons to do that. They are cheaper. They're more expandable, more repairable, for sure. Mm-hmm. But that would be for, you know, somewhat more stationary office staff. I would say I would really advise against that for anybody who works any place outside of the office, you know, like a pastor or even a teacher. And try and avoid, I think there's still that that thinking out there that they need a computer at home and at work. I would say if your organization allows it, you know, take that, you know, take your computing device as your computing device. You're going to be a lot more productive. And studies have shown that, too. If organizations let their employees take their computer home, they're getting more out of them because they're doing some work at home and they're more productive. And then you know, just try and live with the one platform as opposed to trying all kinds of syncing technologies because you're sharing files with Dropbox or SugarSync or whatever. Things just get out of whack. You know, just get one good device and live with it.
Yeah, train your brain. We probably should tie this into our shallows discussion, the fact that your brain gets trained to certain keyboards and certain platforms and things. Before we leave this topic, Martin, maybe just spending a few minutes on the mobile side of things, the right. Android versus iOS side. And interestingly, even though you're a Mac, you're an Android person, and I'm an iOS person. That's where I've really bought into the whole Apple ecosystem. And again, I think when you choose a platform, and like I said, two major players, Android versus iOS, you're investing in that platform. I've bought lots of apps. I started with an iPod Touch, and when I got my iPad, then all my apps just showed up there nicely. All that financial investment that I've made into the apps and the time that I've taken to learn them was portable to my iPad and now to my iPhone. So the same is true with Android. If you buy things in the Google Play Store or wherever, when you add a new device, it syncs to your new device. So pretty big decision if you're getting into the mobile platform at this point. I'm a huge iOS fan. I like the the cleanness of the design and that kind of thing. I think it's a more controlled environment, whereas the Android is kind of the wild, wild west side of things. Anything goes, but you also have the ability on the Android side to be more customized. So
I would agree with that. I think one of the reasons, and I would almost always advise iPhone for somebody just starting out. I think it's a good introductory smartphone for people to get used to the concept, and things are kind of structured, and you touch a button and something, the application opens, and then you work in that application, and then you hit the home button, you do something else. You don't have the widgets and, the configurability that comes with, let's say, an Android platform. I would say on the device side, even though Apple products are very nice, they are very limited. So you have one screen size if you're looking for an iPhone. One of the reasons that I use Android versus iPhone at this point is I have the ability to have different screen sizes. So, as my eyes get a little bit older, the iPhone screen, while beautiful, can be pretty hard to read at times as well. That the text size and just the icon size and the application layout, those kinds of things. So Android gives you a little bit more flexibility. Like your husband Kevin has a Galaxy S4 in that screen. I mean, it's not twice as big as an iPhone, but sometimes it feels that way because you just have a little bit more, quite a bit more screen real estate to some degree, and more flexibility with apps, I guess. So you can get you can kind of do whatever you want with an Android. So more of a hacker's tool, but I would say there is more and more parity too. You got all the apps on either side. So if you're looking for an Instagram or whatever, it's going to be on both platforms at this point. So
of course, for app development, you probably want to be able to work in both worlds and develop for both. But I can say that the whole Apple side of app development is a very closed thing. You have to go through the iTunes approval process to get apps out there, as opposed to on the Android side, you can create apps and add them to your device just for your use. You don't have to even put it in a store or anything like that. You can add things yourself, do a lot more customization. So yeah, if you're a hacker, I think Android is definitely the platform for you.
Yeah. Price-wise, it's pretty equal there. The considerations, at least with a smartphone, are going to be more with the carrier, the coverage you have, versus anything else. So that's always a consideration. And then with a tablet, it's going to be the ecosystem again, what apps are available. Form factor now is less a factor, that Apple now has two, the mini and the regular iPad, whatever is going to work for you. And then if you go with Android or Windows, you've got, from 6 inches to 16 inches.
Last night I bought my son a track phone, Android track phone. So $100 for a track phone, and you can just add minutes to it to use it. But it's got Wi-Fi, so he can use it over Wi-Fi for free, basically. So you've got all kinds of options with Android.
Yep. All right, Sally. Well, I don't know if we've decided anything for anybody. It's a good conversation to have. Again, the point is just make sure you're doing things for the right reason. That for these are ministry tools, and you want to pick the right one at the right price point to do the things that you needed to do and the things that you're going to want to do as a part of your responsibilities to your organization, to your church, your school, and obviously to your Savior. So, shall we move along to ministry resources? And we do have each category, our ministry resource and listener reviews. We've got stuff in each, so we're adding to our contestants list for our fabulous prizes.
Absolutely. And of all things, stuff in each, and I'm missing the link that I need for ministry resources. So let me open that up quick, and I will share my screen.
From Jim Bauer, Baxter, Minnesota. That's the one we're looking at, right?
That's right. And Jim shared a link to free-scores.com. And let me just turn on my screen share and I'll show you what it looks like. free scores, and boy, all the things to coordinate here. He says it's a great free public domain music arrangement site. There are many arrangements for a large variety of musical instruments. The printable PDF music is free, and audio files are also available. So just want to kind of give you a quick walkthrough of the interface, because when you come here, the site comes up in French. So right away, you can get the Google Translate thing going, but there's actually a toggle here that you can select and switch the site to English. So be aware, you can get the site in English. The other thing to be aware of, and I realized this right away, is there's a lot of advertisement on the site. So I wanted to click over here in the left navigation, and I realized this was actually an advertisement. Where you want to go is down here under free sheet music, a little further down in the left navigation. When you expand, for instance, the instruments area, you can see different instruments that are available. I clicked on organ, for example. It says there are 3,700 different arrangements available here for organ, and you can filter it in a lot of different ways. Maybe you just are looking for Toccata and Fugue by Bach. You can click on a title when you find what you're looking for, and as Jim described, there's the ability to listen to it and to download it in PDF format. So. Cool. Lots of options here and lots of free music. They're just considering themselves kind of a clearinghouse or a hosting site for all of this free sheet music that you can print from here. There's even videos.
Public domain, kind of stuff, right?
So that's the ministry resource for you, free-scores.com, and we thank Jim Bauer from Baxter, Minnesota for that.
Thanks, Jim. Let's move on to our listener reviews.
Listener reviews, and again, we heard from one of our listeners in this category. This was from Ryan Rosenthal, who teaches at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And this is something I'd never heard of, Martin. It's a high-definition wireless presentation system. It's from a company called IPEVO. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's basically an extra wireless device that hooks into your existing projector and allows you to project wirelessly from any computing device on your network. So Ryan uses this in his school, and you'll have to read his write-up. He has lots of different applications for it. But basically, has it hooked into his network. You can hook into your network wirelessly or with a wired connection. He uses a wired connection, and then any computer on the network, as I said. So he tells me he's used it on with his laptop from across the building through several walls and everything, and it projected in the classroom where it was hooked up. So lots of options there. Ryan goes on to describe the fact that you can hook into the device with HDMI and stream sound as well wirelessly, and then he also talks about the fact that you can display multiple screens, so multiple computers on your network displayed at once, up to four screens at once. So he's actually toying with this with his students' computers. So at any given time, their computer might be up on the screen for his monitoring purposes. So they know, you know, that that's an option, that they may be projected and that they're being monitored in that way. So interesting applications there at Faith in Fond du Lac. We really appreciate you sharing that. You can find a link in the show notes to the website and more information about it. The device, like I said, you have to have your own projection, your own computer network to use it. You know, it uses wireless over your existing network, but the device itself is $199.
Interesting. And then it looks like you have a dongle that you plug in to your, either to your projector, and you must have software that sits on your on your computer. Okay, I'm just looking at their site. They got a ton of stuff here, all kinds of presentation kinds of things, for iPad stands to speaker phones to little converters. So if you're into presentation technology, there's a lot of stuff here you may want to take a look at. So that's IPEVO.com, and it's their subtitle is Designed for Learning. So I'm assuming they're really focusing on the classroom. So.
Yep. Cool. Thanks for sharing the site, Ryan.
Okay. Let's move along to our tip of the week. And I will lead things off. And let me do a quick screen share here. And my tip of the week is all about passwords. There's been a lot in the news. There has been a lot in the news over the past 6 to 12 months, really, with security breaches and passwords that are out in the wild now that have been stolen from major companies. Mine was one of those recently when Adobe had a problem, and one of my credentials were stolen. And I don't know if it's been cracked yet, but it's a potential that it could be cracked. So if and I have one password that I use for, and this is bad password hygiene, one password that I use for accounts that I don't care a lot about, so not my banking password or credit cards or those kinds of things, or my Synod sites. But there's a few that I reuse, and this happened to be one of them, which was a real headache. And the tip here is to use not necessarily a tool in particular, although I use LastPass and would highly recommend it. I think you use that too, right, Sally?
I do.
But one of the neat features about LastPass is it can auto-generate long, strong passwords. So as you're creating a login, and we all have many, many logins now that require username and password, so as you're filling out a username and password field on a new site, LastPass, if it's a plugin on your browser, will notice that and will suggest that you generate a long password. And very easy. It kind of happens right in line with the process that you're doing. You just tell it how long or what the password strength should be. You can identify what kinds of characters need to be in a certain sites have requirements for, needs to have an uppercase, a lowercase, a number, a special character, those kinds of things. The generator for LastPass also allows you to make it pronounceable, avoid ambiguous characters that aren't frequently used or that could be misread, like a 1 versus an L, those kinds of things. And then you just click the button and it automatically inserts it, and then once you click the Save Site button that LastPass presents you with, when you're going into a site, it automatically stores it. Now, these passwords you're not going to remember, and you're kind of stuck if you forget your LastPass password, but that's the whole point, that you have very strong passwords and no two are the same. And this is a tool that I wouldn't be without, and now I've got it on my mobile devices, so I really have it wherever I go. And then I just change my master LastPass password about every 3 months so that I really just have to remember one. As long as I have my LastPass, I can do this. But really the tip here is generate those long, strong passwords through whatever tool you're using. Most password generators or password reminder tools like LastPass or 1Password, etc., have this ability to generate these long passwords. So do that, because your password is going to get stolen at some point.
Yep, I'm a LastPass fan, Martin. Great tip. I would just reiterate what you said is to save the sites once you use one of these strong passwords. Make sure you push that button that says save the site, because otherwise you're going to be cooked, because you'll never remember those passwords that it generates. They're really funky.
Yeah, make sure it's stored in there and stored correctly.
Yep. For sure. All right, I have a tip as well. See if I can share my monitor. My tip is actually kind of along the lines of productivity and ease of use, maybe ties in with our discussion a little bit earlier today about computers. And that is, no matter what computing device I'm on, at least at my desk when I'm doing hardcore work, I'm really sold on the fact of using dual monitors. show this picture from Wikipedia of someone using two monitors at their desk. And screen real estate to me is a premium. Location, 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 just like regular real estate. Being able to spread out my work across two monitors is just huge for me. And so if you haven't, you know, invested in this direction and you're looking to up your productivity, I would say this is probably my number one tip for doing that. Just having the extra amount of space to spread out the programs you're working on, to look at things in two different windows is a really big thing. Now, on the technical side of things, I'm probably not the right person to be talking about how to pull this off, but I know you probably need a video card with dual input put or two video cards in your computer in order to make this happen. If you are a laptop user, typically you can just add an external monitor to your laptop and spread your screen from your laptop across to a second, more traditional monitor. So that's probably more easy to do than with a desktop where you need an extra video card or whatever the circumstance might be. But whatever it takes, I'm telling you, it's worth it to spend another $150 on an extra monitor and have the dual screens. I recommend it highly. Are you a dual screen person, Martin?
Off and on. It depends on what I'm doing. If I'm doing a lot of traveling, then it just is not practical or doesn't help me that much because I'm always on a single screen, and it really does depend. But yeah, I kind of flop back and forth. I think if you're doing dual screens, one tip is to make sure they're the same size and resolution, because it can be maddening if you're dragging windows across and one of them's, you know, twice the size of another, and you know, resolution's out of whack. So it's good to kind of keep things consistent, and then they're at the same eye level as well, and the same angle and same resolution. So that would be probably the best approach if you're going two monitors.
Definitely.
You don't have that always have that option if you're using a laptop, of course. But great tip. I think that's really great productivity tip. Should we move on to picks of the week, Sally?
Yep, and my pick is iOS-centric. So for those of you that don't have an iPhone or iPad, maybe this isn't as helpful. It's also not super ministry-centric either, but I'm telling you, it's a pick that's come in handy for me. And it's a small little app, costs $2 from the iTunes store. It's called Nutrition Menu. And basically, they have categorized over 41,000 restaurant menu items from 351 different restaurants, as well as common foods like apples and meat and frozen meals, brand specific. And they have all kinds of nutrition information. So, you know, I think back in the day, most of us were concerned about calorie counting. And certainly they have calorie counts, but they also provide things like, for us, carbohydrate counting with two sons now with diabetes. Counting carbs is a big deal at our house, so we want to make sure their insulin dosages are correct. And this is basically, this $2 app is what sees us through that whole process. So if you're looking for excellent nutrition information, this is definitely the app to check out. I recommend it highly. Just a few screenshots showing you, they, you know, pretty much show the complete food label. So calories, fat, cholesterol, carbs, all of that available to you. And they have some functions where you can track what you're eating and, you know, set goals for calorie counting or whatever it may be. But for us, just walking into, you know, Panera Bread or whatever, and being able to look up the carb count for a particular sandwich is just super valuable and come in handy more times than I can tell you, and I recommend Nutrition Menu highly.
Cool. Well, you say it's not really ministry, but it really is stewardship, and, you know, stewardship of the body and taking care of the engine, you know, that God has given you, so you can do His work and live under His grace. So all of these obviously are useful productivity tools, and some in certain circumstances are critical. You know, how you wonder how you managed without them in the past, and here's a great example of something that really needs to fit nicely. It does fit nicely in the life stream, you know, of an individual who really needs it. So
definitely.
Cool. All right, my pick of the week is a tool called Slides. I was at a, well, we were both at a conference a couple weeks ago, and I use this presentation technology. It's slid.es. It's basically an online PowerPoint / keynote tool. So it's a presentation tool with a lot of the same features. And it's just a, it's kind of a simplistic yet elegant approach to slide presentations. So I've got it here on the screen, those of you that are following along at home. You have the ability to have a series of slides, of course, so it, you know, it has the text, and you can use your keyboard or your mouse to navigate. You can also get kind of a bird's eye view of all your slides, kind of the slide sorter using the escape key, and then you can kind of go directly to where you want. You can insert images, full screen images, and they look just beautiful when you throw them in here because it kind of takes care of the resolution for you. You can embed content, even interactive content like PDFs, where you can you know, page through a PDF, make it go full screen. You can go back and forth with the with little arrow buttons, all kinds of options here. You can also go directional. You can see here that you've in this case you don't have an up and down arrow, but you can put content above and below. So it, it kind of acts a bit of a navigational tool. And there's all kinds of features that are available. You can use this on mobile phones or mobile devices, all kinds of templates that are available. If you the base one is free. I'll show you pricing in a minute. But if you upgrade, you can have private slide shares. You can present offline so you don't need to be online. You can use Dropbox to sync it so you can share and work collaboratively. You have a revision history so you can kind of go back and see things. Pricing is free for up to 250 megabytes of storage, which is what I'm using, and they're public decks only, which is fine. But you can then upgrade to Pro if you really want to use the tool to its greatest extent, which would be 2 gigabytes of storage for $7 a month or $70 per year, which is not too bad. You kind of see all the things that you get. You can export to PDF. And a couple of other things that, that might be useful for you. But there's some beautiful themes here. You can kind of see in some cases where they've built some very cool animations and those kinds of things that are can be very useful depending on your circumstance. There's lots of cool transitions. You can go full screen. People can comment on it. They can share it, which is kind of nice for a presentation. You have the ability to kind of create as long a slide presentation as you want, and also then autoplay it. So there's lots of uses for this, and I found it very easy to use and set up, and just kind of a refreshing change from PowerPoint or Keynote, which I had typically used. So it's a cool tool. I like it. So that's Slides, slid.es.
You know, we've talked before on the podcast about Prezi, another alternative for PowerPoint or Keynote, and I've done Prezis, and I find them very challenging.
There's definitely a
learning curve to getting comfortable with Prezis. I don't think that Slides would be that way, is that right?
No, very simple. It's more linear. It's you know, left and right or up and down, so you do have some freedom there. But they've really focused on simplicity but elegance. And I think once you try it a little bit, you may want to stick with it. And then you've got them all online and stored. And it's a well-done tool.
Excellent. And then I would assume with it being in the cloud and the fact that you can embed things into it, is the slide presentation embeddable as well? Can you put it on your website or whatever?
That's a great question.
Because that would be neat, especially with the, you know, the tree kind of structure to allow people to explore your slide deck on their own.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to play with that. But I would assume so. They've kind of tried to provide all the features that, you know, all the use cases that somebody might want to do that in. So I would think you could embed it on your own website. But I'd have to follow up with that.
All right, we better head over to community feedback. What do you
think? Please do.
All right, I'm going to start with a share from one of our favorite listeners, Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska. We had the privilege of seeing Pastor Gunther at the conference we attended a few weeks ago, and he shared with us one of the cool tools he picked up at that conference. It's called PhoneVite. PhoneVite is a way to send a voice message to a group of people. And let's just read what he said. It allows you to make one call to go out to your entire congregation. I used it last night to call the entire congregation to remind them of a school event tonight and a voters' meeting on Sunday. To call all my members took me 1 minute, and a 5-cent call to each person cost less than $2. So I guess that would vary depending on the size of your congregation. I can also see who got the message and who hung up after how long. I set up the phone number for each classroom and for the entire school as well. It looks like a cool solution for announcements and reminders, and they are going to be playing with it more up at Grace and Kenai. So please keep us informed, Pastor Gunther, if you find any downfalls to it. Obviously, there is a price to pay for sending out phone bites, but it seems like a good place, a good tool to explore for those important messages.
Cool.
Let's see. Next up, we heard from Mike Marquardt, who is at Peace in Hartford, your congregation, Martin, and he was sharing information about a regularly scheduled Twitter chat that they're going to be conducting on, I believe, typically the
third Thursday of the month.
But this month, it's going to be on Wednesday. So it's actually tomorrow night, November 20th, at 8 p.m. Central Time. And the Twitter chat focus is on Wells Worship. So you're to use the hashtag #PoundWellsWorship if you want to participate in the tweet up. And one easy tool for following a Twitter chat is called Tweet Chat. So I'm going to throw a link in the show notes for that as well. It's a way to just kind of tune out the rest of Twitter and just see...
focus on that conversation. Yeah.
Exactly, the topics that come up with that hashtag. So Twitter chats are merely using a hashtag and searching on that hashtag basically to see everything that people are saying around that hashtag. And they're looking at Advent and Christmas worship, especially the Christmas 2013 C13 resources that are being produced from the Synod currently. And so
Mike is on the hymnal committee, so they have a vested interest in hearing from you. I think this is one of the reasons they're doing these Wells Worship Twitter chats. So be sure to tune in if you have any interest in both sharing your thoughts on maybe future hymnal direction, but maybe more importantly, getting up to speed on what the available resources are for this coming Christmas, Advent and Christmas season. So remember, that's tomorrow night, Wednesday, November 20th at 8 o'clock Central. Wells Worship is the hashtag.
Next up, I shared a link to a Storyfy I created, the first time for me, but Storyfy is another Twitter-type tool that allows you to pull together things and archive them, basically. And what I wanted to archive was a recent Twitter chat with the hashtag MLCEDU, and this was part of the MLC convocation that happened last Wednesday at Martin Luther College, where they hosted Ryan Rothge, who's a teacher at Manitowoc Lutheran High School and also the tech coordinator, and he did a presentation called Technology, Harder and Easier Than It Looks. So you got to put yourself in Ryan's shoes. He had the opportunity to speak to up-and-coming teachers being trained at Martin Luther College in the education area and tell them a little bit about how technology may influence their teaching career. And, you know, Martin, you and I feel this all the time. It's kind of like looking into a crystal ball, because whatever we're doing with technology right now will certainly be outdated by the time these students graduate in just a couple of years. And so that's a challenge for a presenter to share technology with education students. I think Ryan, he just hit a home run with his presentation. You can kind of follow it if you read through the Storyfy and all the kind of back channel conversation that was going on there. He had some really great points to share, and I think inspirational words for these students. So check it out. Interestingly, some of my Twitter friends picked up on the conversation and participated. Jason Schmidt even was tweeting some, which kind of goes to that global nature of technology and things. So it was a fun conversation to be a part of, and Ryan brought out some really great points that I think everyone would enjoy reading through.
Awesome.
Check it out. Next up, we just want to make mention, last week on the podcast, we talked about an email we received from Emmy Wilson, who's at Emmanuel in Greenfield, Wisconsin, and she was wondering about giving her website visitors information on setting up a podcatcher. So in other words, if they wanted to start automatically downloading different podcasts, how to assist them with doing that. And she found a great resource from our friends at Wikipedia. If you would like to link to it, we'll have a link in the show notes, but it basically just lists a lot of different software that's available for subscribing to podcasts. And she thought it would be appropriate to just include a link on her church website so that people could grab software if they don't have some already set up. One follow-up question that she had was whether or not to actually include like a disclaimer, you know, kind of guiding the people that, you know, be careful what you download and we're not supporting any particular platform or anything, and, you know, use your own discernment as you find free downloads on the web and things like that. And I guess that's probably not a bad idea, to just encourage them to be wise in what they click on the web. There's a lot of yucky stuff out there that you don't want to get downloaded to your computer. So
right, or your mobile device, which is primarily where I think people are going to listen to or watch podcasts.
Absolutely. And then finally, one last mention from Pastor Rick Tuttle, who's pastor at St. John's in Renville, Minnesota. And Rick was with us at the conference in Las Vegas a few weeks ago and actually posted a blog post about it. So if you want to learn more or hear more about Rick's perspective on the conference, you can certainly head over and check out his blog post. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Very good. Thank you for everybody who provided feedback. WellsTech.Wells.net is the show notes page where you can find all kinds of ways to communicate with us. Pinterest, Digo, Facebook, Twitter, good old-fashioned email, voicemail. Just leave a comment on the show notes page. All of those mechanisms will get to us, and we'll get your stuff on the show where other people can benefit from it. So, and don't forget about our listener reviews and our ministry resources. We're looking for entries there. So if you've got something to share, please take the time to do that.
That's right. You can win a Nexus 7 tablet or an Apple TV. Actually, somebody wrote to me this weekend and said, I'm looking forward to my Apple TV. So they're counting on winning. You guys better get your name in the pot. Maybe you could win instead. Who
knows? By the end of May, we're going to pull a name out of the hat, so to speak. Next week is Thanksgiving week, Sally. And not only are we going to take some time to give thanks to our Lord, and take a few days off from work, but we're going to have a show next week, and it's going to be focused on giving thanks for some of the tech that the Lord has given to us recently and how that has advanced ministry efforts. So you want to stay tuned next week for our Thanksgiving show where we talk about thanks for technology. Our giveaway, our music giveaway this week is from Kevin Lersch. Now the Light Has Gone Away. If you want to download that song and have it for your listening pleasure, you can do that by going to our show notes page, clicking on the link that Sally places there every week, and is there available for 1 week only. So if you want to download Now the Light Has Gone Away from Kevin Lersch, who has a beautiful voice, you will want to head on over to wellstech.wells.net, click on that link, download the MP3, and you've got it in your very own music library. So thank you to Kevin for his willingness to share his music with us. Sally, I think that's going to be about it for this week. We survived the Mac versus PC debate. I think it was very cordial and hopefully beneficial to everybody. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.